Bonjour, y'all. Welcome back to Outlandish Parish with this little detour episode. Now, I know that this episode is coming out after Carnival of 2024. And what can I say? February got away from me, y'all. It just did. That's the only excuse I can offer. And we thought about not necessarily releasing this seasonal interview episode, but the Courier, I think, and having a deeper understanding of the Courier has been such an important part of what I learned this season. The Courier is something that is new to me, something that I am just learning about. And I know that I would have liked to have been able to find this episode when I was trying to learn more about it, to hear a conversation with somebody who'd actually attended. And so we decided to go ahead and get it out here. And maybe you're one of those people that tomorrow's the day you start planning for next year. Or maybe you're one of those people from the future who's going to be listening to this in years to come. For whatever reason you're here, welcome to Outlandish Parish. I would like to welcome to the show Miss Kelly Landry, originally from Pierre Part, but now she lives in, do you live in Lafayette?
Yeah, I live in Lafayette. Yeah.
Right on. It's a cool place. I know a lot of people say they're from Lafayette, kind of avoid the complications of trying to explain Abbeville or Rain or some of the little towns around it.
I saw something the other day. It was like a joke. It's like, we're from Lafayette, so you're not from Lafayette.
But today we're talking about the world famous Courier de Mardi Gras, right? The Cajun Prairie running in Mardi Gras that it seems like a lot of people in the world have heard of, but aren't necessarily familiar with. It's a very strange, small practice in a very small part of a very small state. So Kelly, why don't you do me a favor, just introduce yourself and let us know what your history is with the Courier.
Well, I'm Kelly, originally from Pierre Part. So that's around the Morgan City-ish area. Grew up there basically my entire life until I moved to Lafayette whenever I was 18 and went to UL and spent school years here and then kind of just stuck around. And it wasn't until probably, I want to say 2014 or 2015 that I started to reconnect a little bit with my Cajun roots. And I always said that I'm noticing it now. People from Pierre Part and around that area don't really talk about being Cajun, or they don't really talk about the traditions because they don't really have to, because they're still doing them. And there's some people still speak Cajun French there. And so it's not something that's really talked about. And so I never really talked about it. A lot of people have a lot of pride about that, about their heritage. And I just kind of wanted to know more and found myself becoming friends with people who are musicians and are just people who go to, you know, the Blue Moon and listen to music, and kind of getting myself familiar with a lot of those like Cajun famous folks, right?
I think it's something kind of similar down here, is that when you live in a place like Cutoff, like Pierre Part, which actually sound like they're pretty similar for all that I've spent much time there. I've stopped at the dollar store. But, you know, it's one of those things that when you're in it, why would you have to talk about it? Like, why would fish talk about the water? Yeah. And then when you go to some place like Lafayette, where it's part of what they're promoting as their identity, it's part of what they are presenting as a product almost. And you look at like the tourist industry around Cajun culture, that's mostly centered around Lafayette, despite what other parishes are trying to do. But it's not really something that you can understand until you're outside of it. And then Lafayette is one of those places you can both be outside of it and inside of it, because you're like, oh, I'm Cajun too.
Right.
But y'all are like fancy with it. And like, that's something I call that sophisticated.
Yeah.
Copyright me. Copyright me. That's my Facebook handle is sophisticated. But that is something that in Lafayette, as a person coming from Cajun culture outside of the Lafayette area, when you go to Lafayette, that's one of the things you're struck by, is that it is Cajun, definitely Cajun. But it is also like, they talk about it, they analyze it, they get intellectual, which is you know, really interesting.
That was different, right? Like, that was so different for me, because it just, it's really hard to put into words, because the way that I grew up, it was just, it was. That's the best way I can put it. And then you get here and, you know, living in Lafayette and then getting into the traditions, especially surrounding Mardi Gras, because that's whenever everybody flies the flag of, hey,
I'm Cajun. We double down hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, my little town does this and my little town does that. And oh, this, my town was the first town to do this. And I'm like, you know, I'm from Pierreport, where it's like, you know, you have people who is just like, they don't understand. I wouldn't say that they don't understand, but I guess they don't find it necessary to do that, only because Pierreport also is a pretty isolated community in terms of like geography too. So I just never grew up with like seeing people be proud of really like their heritage besides knowing how to cook good food, you know? Like,
no, and I think that that was something when you look at what's called kind of by some people, the Cajun Renaissance that happened in the 70s, The places that weren't really part of that or didn't have people that were contributing to that, you know, may why they worried about that, that's way up the bayou. You know, that from the outside, it may be culturally connected, but from the inside, I don't have much to do with Lafayette. I didn't have much to do with, you know, Prairie Cajun culture is definitely different from
Bayou Cajun
culture. Yeah.
It's so different. Like, I think it was weird because I'm like 2 hours away, right? And I'm like, I'm having a culture shock right now because I never even had boudin or crackling. Like, I don't think I've ever heard about boudin before I got to Lafayette, which when I say that, a lot of people are like, what are you, like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, that's not, like, we're seafood people, you know? And yeah, that's, so I just never knew what that was. And it's funny because I'm thinking about the career itself. The first one that I went to, part of like one of the breaks, you know, midday of during the careers, they give you this link of boudin and it's on like a Evangeline made piece of bread.
That sounds delicious.
Oh, it hits so, it's like, cause, you know, you're the midway point, right? And so you're tired, exhausted, you're probably dehydrated because drinking, you know, so it's like,
yeah,
if you're from out of town, yeah, that is especially kind of like a, wait, what's going on? And then, but if you're a Bayou Cajun, like myself, like us, you know, it's just,
you know what's going on, but it's still confusing.
But it's still, yeah, it's still confusing. It's like I said, it's that feeling is so hard to put into words because you're confused, but you're still going to eat it because you're like, well, I mean, a Cajun made this, so I mean, it's probably good.
I mean, it's the boudin they hanging out at the Courier de Mardi Gras. It's going to be the good boudin. What was Mardi Gras for you as a kid, like in Pierreport? Like, what was that like?
So interestingly enough, and you know, I don't want to get canceled by anybody who's listening from Pierreport, because maybe I don't remember right, but my parents really weren't like Mardi Gras people. My dad worked offshore. My mom, like, she introduced it to us. My mom's from Thibodaux. And so we would go to the Thibodaux Mardi Gras. We would go to the Thibodaux parade. So it was that very New Orleans adjacent Mardi Gras where you go to the parade, beads, stuff like that.
Probably not that dissimilar from like Houma, Thibodaux. Like the Houma Mardi Gras, I find it's kind of similar to Thibodaux Mardi Gras, which is probably fairly similar to like Morgan City Mardi Gras. Like that sort of medium city, beads and hanging out.
Yeah.
Barbecue and sort of Mardi Gras.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's very like adjacent to New Orleans, you know, and that kind of their traditional way of, you know, Mardi Gras and everything. And I remember being in school, my primary school, Pierreport Primary School, you know, they get, I think it was, if you were, it's either, I think it's kindergarten, they would get us a king cake and whoever, they would give the girls a king cake and the boys a king cake and whoever got the baby was king and queen, and they'd around the little roundabout to pick up your kids, they would do a parade. And so that's like my experience of that. I wasn't king or queen. That was my friend Kobe and my friend Aaron. I remember that. It's like a core memory of mine because I was all mad that I didn't get the baby. Like I wanted to be queen, but it just wasn't in the cards.
Well, that actually comes back to the old tradition of the king of the bean. Like that was like using that to choose royalty is actually like tradition than just having the baby and then like, oh, my babe, you got to buy the next king cake, you know, that's the old tradition.
Yeah. So I was, oh man, I was all mad about it. But I mean, that's me being like 4 or 5 years old. But whenever I moved to Lafayette, I didn't even know about the Couriers until I kind of found myself with this new group of friends who were really about, you know, going to the Blue Moon and going out to, you know, the dance, you know, like that.
If anybody's listening to this, I feel like you should know what the Blue Moon is. It is a hostel music venue and kind of like to the best of my knowledge, like the spot for traditional Cajun music in Lafayette. Now they pack them in so deep that you can't really waltz some night.
Oh, you're shuffling.
But it's go ahead and check it out. It's like just Google Blue Moon Saloon. I'll have a link in the show notes. It is a hell of a venue. And if you come to Lafayette and you want some good music, that is a great place to go. And I think it works out like back when they were doing the dorm beds. Mm-hmm. It was you got your dorm bed, but then you also got like you got to get into whatever concert was going on for free, and you got two free beers. Basically, for the price of what they usually cover for their concerts plus two beers,
you're
paying $10 for a band to not have to drive anywhere after the good show. So it was
right. No, and you know what's funny about that too is I don't know if they still do this, but at one point, if you lived within a certain block of Blue Moon, like in that Freetown area, you would basically get a Blue Moon pass where you never have to pay cover because the noise. I mean, it's in a neighborhood.
Oh yeah, my sister lived not too far from there, but she didn't hang out at the Blue Moon. She has like little bitty kids, and she lived there.
Yeah, but they try to compensate for the noise. But yeah, you're right. It's a great venue. I mean, they have Cajun Jam every Wednesday, and that's mm-hmm. actually free. And you get to see, sometimes you go in there and you see these Grammy award winning people just like sitting around in a circle on the stage, just like jamming with people. And that's kind of, I mean, honestly, I can't pinpoint when I first heard about all the like Cajun prairie, you know, traditions with the courier and all that until I probably started going there, to be honest.
It is kind of a nugget of traditional Cajun culture, but what was your first experience with the courier? Like you went in as an attendee, like you just kind of showed up and you're like, okay, my partners are taking me out in the field. It's going to be fine. Like,
yeah.
What was your first courier experience?
Oh man. So my first one, I was with a group of friends and we had somehow gotten to know Wilson Savoy, who his brother is Joel. And so Joel lives out in Eunice in this, you know, unincorporated rather piece of land, an area called Ficataye.
You're going to have to spell that one to me, babe.
Oh yeah. I would have to look it up, but, but yeah, it's not spelled the same way as it sounds. Whenever you look at it, you're like, there ain't no way. For some reason, it's me and this group of friends. We just knew Wilson very well and found out that his brother, Joel, and Wilson's in the Pine Leaf Boys. They're Cajun musicians. And I think they have some Grammy wins. But anyway, Joel had started this career, I think about 6 to 7 years before. I'm just eyeballing mm-hmm. that number, honestly. But we go out there and first of all, you have to get there super early. And again, we're driving from Lafayette. So it's about an hour drive. You show up and you're basically at Joel's house, like in his property, right? So it's just this house off a highway and it's all this land surrounding it. There's a big field and we get there and we're like, oh, people are camped out. Like people camped out the night before. We didn't know anything. And so this particular year was freezing. I mean, it was so, so cold that we did not prepare at all. I just knew that I had to have a hat and a mask. So we all went to the Goodwill and found some like scrap fabric and just whatever we could find as far as pants. And then we, of course, made our costumes. The thing is, like, these are required, like the hat, the capuchon, like you have to have the hat and you have to have the mask. And this run too is also you have to participate. So there's no, like, if you're like a journalist or something like that, or you have a camera, you're expected to also dress. Like you have to have the hat and the mask as
no
well.
Spectators.
No spectators. Yeah. This is not a spectator sport.
The capuchon, is that the name for the hat?
Yeah. For this particular run, as far as I observed, and granted, I was drunk for a lot of those, but
I mean, it's Mardi Gras, honey. We're not going to assume that anybody could be legally held to testify.
Right.
I get it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, some of them, they have mitres, which resemble the Catholic bishop, that particular hat. So people from New Orleans who go to this run are not prepared, but he showed up and he had like the hat that like Aladdin wears. Because he was like, I mean, they wanted us to wear a hat, so.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was acceptable. He was like, I got my hat. And I was like, all right,
okay.
Cool.
I mean,
he's a cool guy, but you show up and, like, you know, again, not a spectator sport. Like, you gotta participate. This thing starts at like 8 o'clock sharp. It's off of a highway, so you know that you're in the right spot because you just see cars for like a mile or two just parked on the side of the road, and there's no shoulder, so you definitely know you're in the right place. And so we walk and we gather under this big tent. And I mean, again, like, it's freezing and it's like nasty wet. I think it was still raining like in the morning. So it was, honestly, it was kind of miserable. But the first thing that they did, they kind of, I think they opened up. Now, granted, this is like going on 10 years ago, so just bear with me. But they opened up with a band. You know, everybody's drunk from the night before and dancing and singing and carrying on. And we're all dancing in like in the mud. I mean, people probably got sick after this. I know I didn't. I was unwell. But then the VLN, I can remember it was my friend Toby. So his name's Toby Rodriguez. Really awesome human. He's just kind of jack of all trades, butcher, carpenter, everything. And he's dressed as, I can only describe as like steampunk, really kind of scary looking man, like very Edgar Allan Poe. Yeah. And so he's like head VLAN. Basically, like VLAN are supposed to like keep the Mardi Gras in order. And when I say the Mardi Gras, the way that the career like refers to the group of people who have gathered there, they call us the Mardi Gras.
Yeah, take a Mardi Gras. Like my grandma, anytime somebody dressed up when I was little, she called them like it's a noun. It's yeah, Mardi Gras. Like, look, you are a Mardi Gras. Like
that's, yeah, that's how they refer to it. The whole group, and they're like, all right, Mardi Gras, like we're going, you know, it's him. And then there's all these other VLAN, and they're all dressed in like black and red. That's how you know they're VLAN. Toby, I remember he didn't have to wear a mask. Like you knew it was him. And the Capitaine also doesn't wear a mask. So you know definitely like who they are. There is no question. And Capitaine is always on a horse with the flag, mm-hmm. and he has a cape. Always a guy. And so my it's funny because Toby really gets in character. I think it's very cathartic for him. And like, look, I don't want to speak for him. I hope he listens because he really like touched my heart with just how he does the whole thing, because he gets so into it and he's very intense and he could mm-hmm. be a lot. But I love that he's like, all right, Mardi Gras. And so if it's your first year, and this is again 8 o'clock in the morning, right? We're under this tent. He gets his little mic and he's like, this your first year. You got to line up right here in front, you know, in front of the stage or whatever. So we all get there and he's like, all right, anything I say, you got to do. So we're like, okay, this is basically Simon Says. So me and my friends, you know, it's our first year. So we're like, all right. And my friend with the Aladdin hat in the getup, his name's Andrew. He's a riot. So we're all like under the tent with a bunch of people who'd never done this before. And Toby's like, all right, now, and granted, it's cold, it's muddy, it's nasty. Where he's like, get on your knees, roll around. And then we're like on our stomach, basically, we're like laying down and you just hear whiskey just being, and smelling the whiskey being poured on you. And, you know, he's picking out people to pour shots, you know, into their mouth and everything. And if you're just coming in and looking at this, and you have no context, it looks fucking wild. Like this guy who looks like this Edgar Allan Poe, intense, evil leader is just trying to pour whiskey into your mouth, being like, yeah, that's right. You know?
Yeah.
It makes me laugh because everybody's embracing it, though. Everybody's like, yeah, we deserve it. You know, like we don't know what we're doing. Oh, man.
That's a lot of the best parties of my life have started out in maybe not that early,
yeah,
but have definitely started out that way.
Yeah. It's like, we don't know what's going to happen. Like nobody knows what's going to happen. We just know we're about to like basically follow these people wherever they lead us. Right. So we have our little moment and, you know, we get everybody gathered and everything. And so we get to we're on the way to the first stop, and in the middle of like, so whenever you're going from A to B, from like start to like the first house. So basically there's a trail that they've already kind of made up where you're going from this one place to another, and you're going to somebody in the community. Usually it's a family. It's one of Joel's neighbors, people mm-hmm. who live in the area of Ficatalle. And in that in between, people are like, I don't know how else to say it, but like rolling, you know, just people are wearing a mask and a hat where nobody knows like who you are, just brings something out of people. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and I kind of felt it too, because once you figure out like you can just do this outlandish and nobody's going to know who you are until maybe the end of the day, you start acting a fool. And so there's people like on the trail, and this trail is like gravel, or just you're walking through like a field, like a straight up field. And they're going and like hanging on trees and doing flips and kicking up mud. And the VLN are like on the side of you, like whipping you. So like, that's another element of it. They're like supposed to keep you in line. And so they're like, stop doing that, Mardi Gras. Y'all fucking up this land and all, you know, like.
Maybe doing the diab.
That's what yeah. I mean, they're just going, everybody's just acting a fucking fool. And so you get to the first house and it's these people and it's like them and their small kids, and everybody is just so up because it's all positive. Don't get me wrong, but they're laughing. And
no, but I do understand, like, you're going to find that carnal release in whatever yeah. way you view responsible for yourself. And I mean,
yeah,
Mardi Gras isn't exactly a time known for like good a moral decisions.
Citizen. Yeah. like people are just like, you know, going, trying to find places to pee or like make out with people. Like, it's so insane. I'm just remembering, like, I'm getting flashbacks, but
it feels like the 90s as a party.
It really is, though. it's just like decadence and over the top stuff. And but you get to this house and it's this just sweet family, and they start playing the Mardi Gras song, which is this traditional Le Mardi Gras song,
By the Baufas. Like, it's one of yeah. the few Mardi Gras tunes that is in like a minor key. I think it's mm-hmm. one of the first, when I finally started listening to Cajun music, that was one of the first songs that I found that like really hit all of my notes right. And it's kind of been an entry point for me into Cajun music in a larger sense. But I know exactly which song you're talking about.
Yeah, that song. I mean, if you don't know all the words by the end of the run, you weren't really paying attention, because the whole time, so you have all the Mardi Gras that are like running it. But then you have the musicians who are riding on the trailers, and they're just either playing that song nonstop or just playing like whatever. It's kind of like an open jam, but they're sitting on that trailer and they're kind of like leading the run or just kind of in between. And a lot of people, you know, they use the trailers to like bring their ice chest or like put their down, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you hear that song constantly. But whenever you get to a house, you know, the tradition is you gotta start begging. And the capitaine will tell you to like repeat it, but it's basically a phrase in French where it's like basically saying like, give us a bunch of to make gumbo. And talking about Mardi Gras, you go in and you're supposed to kneel in front of them and just start begging, and usually they'll either throw something or they'll give it to someone, you know. And then the fun part about that is usually, whether it's the family that provides it or not, they'll have the chicken chasing. And so they'll release, you know, a chicken. And then that's whenever the real revelry and, you know, you might hurt yourself if you go too hard kind of thing starts coming yeah. out. Yeah. Then, you know, you start getting people who are chasing after the chickens. And man, you don't really understand how fast they are until you have to catch one.
I mean, I've owned chickens fast. Like as a non-holiday sport right. animal, like just to have chickens. Yeah, when you've got to go and round up the chickens, that's not a fun.
You can
morning.
Be in shape. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to be in shape. I had to punch a rooster once. Like, chickens are not these docile egg factories. They want to live.
Yeah. I don't know. At this point, maybe like evolution wise, they know. They're like, oh man, it's that time of year again. These
they're singing the song. Like, yeah, the little chickens, they're raising the chickens. They're like, when the time of the song comes, you must run, my child.
No, but really, because they're so fast. Like, I tried maybe like the second year because it wasn't as cold. And I was like, oh, this. Like, I'm going to let all of these like 20, 21 year old dudes who show up, and they like, that's what they want to do. They're like, I'm going to catch the chicken. I'm like, okay, can do like whatever.
Now, what do they do? Like, once they catch it, when they give the ingredients, do they go on the trailer? Is there like a designated vegetable minder?
It's kind of for show, to be honest. Like, you know, as far as I'm concerned, like, it's all symbolic. Like, whenever you go to beg for stuff, I mean, they're giving you, like, a bag of rice, but not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but whenever you get to the end of the run and we would get back to Joel's house, his dad, Mr. Mark, is already making the gumbo and everything.
Got it.
I mean, it's all kind of just...
It's more symbolic than anything else.
Yeah, you're not really, like, taking it to go back and make something, because, to be honest, that would be so long of a day.
Right? It'd be like a Bouchardi day. But so your first courier, you were like, I'm good. This is crazy. Everything's nuts. It sounds like some sort of, like, amazing Kunas Burning Man, to be completely honest.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, that's just the first part, right? Because, look, every run is different, but Fikataye in particular, one of the stops is this big, really, really tall, greased up pole that's just in the middle of a field. I don't even know what the pole was for. It's just this big, greased up pole. And basically what happens is somebody who got there before the Mardi Gras got up there and put a chicken on top of it. And this thing is tall. And the goal here is for the Mardi Gras to make a pyramid and for someone to get up there. And my favorite part about this is that my neighbor, Neil, my sweet summer child yoga instructor, Neil, who can climb and just, he's just feral man. And this was before he was my neighbor. And I remember watching him, like, climb up everybody and then just work his way up this pole with full ease and then get this chicken. And like it's funny because he has a portrait. Somebody took a picture of it because I have a picture of the first year whenever I went. It was this boy, this, like, I don't know, he looked no younger than maybe like 20. And he was the one that got it. And you could just see him. And then, like, dude, people become like this dude's face was just like, yeah, I did it. Like, whenever you kill something, it's like an accomplishment.
I mean,
this dude's face was just like, yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot of opportunity in today's day and age. Like, even if you're a hunter, that's not a chase it down with my bare hands.
Yeah.
Hopefully. I mean, I'm sure. I am 1,000. Sure, there is some deer version of catfish noodling, but that is not the common interaction with wildlife that even, like, as outdoor people are.
Yeah.
I don't know many people that are like, I'm going hunting, and they don't have any gear, right? Like, yeah. It's just them in a pointy hat and, like, a shirt, their momo made, chasing right. something in the yard. Like, if that person says they're going hunting, they usually have, you know, the usual stuff, like a gun and a bag and
right. You know. But no, this part of the run is like, it's so, like, it gives people this very, oh man, it's very animalistic. Cause, like, and it's very,
yeah, it sounds primal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the word. Yeah. Because, like, everybody's like, I mean, people are climbing on top of each other and it's so unorganized because you can tell, like, the first, like, I've seen this happen, this part of the run, it can either take 10 minutes or it'll take 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
It's like that because people get so, they're like, I want to be the one who gets the chicken on top of the pole. I want to. And, like, I remember seeing that and I was like, it ain't for me. Like, I will watch, but that ain't for me. But, like, there a good majority of the Mardi Gras, like, want to do it. And you have people, like, cheering everybody on or whatever. But I just remember, like, anybody who's done it, they'll get up there and it's like this. They just get up there and they end this fucking scream. And it's like, it's so cool because it's not scary. I think that's, like, that's what the Mardi Gras is for. Because, like, you're up there and you're like, I did that. And, like, this thing's about to get eaten. And I did that. But, like, it was kind of set up before. But we're not going to talk about that.
No, I mean, we know how this goes. Like, you're wearing big, colorful, pointy hats. Like, it might be mildly
scripted. Yeah, yeah.
It seems like it is feeling that same sort of vibe that, like, what we think of as Mardi Gras feels, maybe not so much. Bayou Mardi Gras is not this hedonistic primal rite. It's kind of just, it's hanging out with your family and cooking and eating all day. It's like we talked about, like, Pierre Part, Homa, Thibodeau, it's social.
So my friend, she's from Lafayette, but she's lived in New Orleans for probably like 5 years. And she has an interesting perspective because she's in, like, a bunch of crews now in New Orleans, but she's done the careers over here. And so we were talking about it one day and she's like, the vibe is so, the underlying thing is just like, Mardi Gras like theme of like shut up and have a good time, but just don't hurt nobody. Mm-hmm. But the way that happens is very different. Like the events that lead to that feeling of doing like that is very different, because for them, it's very like ceremonial. For yeah. Like very
gentrified, but not in the way that it's kind of.
Yeah. It's very like costume and very
like yeah, royal pomp and circumstance.
It's high society. And then over mm-hmm. here, it's more like, but
roll in the dirt, roll in the dirt. I'm pouring whiskey on you. Like this is your initiation.
Like, who can be the biggest couillon?
But it sounds like there is, to some degree, like, some sort of a ritual with the courier as far as, like, that visual mm-hmm. language. Like, whenever you go to a good concert, whenever you go to a good festival, whenever you go to something that has this repetition mm-hmm. to it, and you find yourself, all of a sudden, you're in the middle of a that you weren't expecting. And that's kind of how the courier is sounding. Whereas in New Orleans, it seems like there's
it's
more...
predictable.
Not just that it's more mm-hmm. predictable, but like there's expectation of mm-hmm. show for other people, whereas the courier feels more like that's for you.
You're hiding behind like a mask and like this costume it's supposed to mock all the things that are supposed to be respected in society. It's kind of like I said earlier, like in New Orleans, you can get whatever, but everybody knows who you are. But this yeah. one is like, do whatever. And no one knows who you are. And there's a lot of freedom in that. And I get yeah. really kind of like emotional about that, because I remember running into one of my friends, and I recognize him only because of his tattoo. His name's Aaron. And I remember running into him, and we just had this really long conversation. We read a lot of the same stuff, and we ended up talking about that for a long time during the run, during like the in-between. But he was telling me, mm-hmm. he's like, man, you know what I like about this is that there's just so much freedom to just like go up to a person you wouldn't go up to and just be stupid and then move on.
Yeah. Now, how many careers have you run in? Like, obviously, your first one made an impression.
So I went two other times to Fikitaye, and then I went to one that was organized by this really, really cool girl. Her name's Ashley Wilson Michaud. And she organized a run, I think that was in 2019. That was the last one that I went to. And it's near Grand Coteau, but it's called the community, much like Fikitaye. It's, you know, you can't find it on a map or anything, but it's called Prairie des Femmes. And it was her own way to say, like, it had a woman as a capitaine, and the Vilain were all women. And it was mostly women that were in the run itself. Right. So that was something that me and one of my best friends, we were like, we want to do that one, you know, because even though Fikitaye is co-ed and was really kind of spearheading like one of the first co-ed runs, because typically they're all men. I mean, I think Mamou is still men. I think Eunice is still men, if that's still accurate. And so the run for Prairie des Femmes, that was also kind of liberating too, because you're like, we're running the show.
Yeah. So you did the Prairie des Femmes and you did the Fikitaye. I'm going to say that so wrong. So Prairie des Femmes, that brings up a really interesting point that I kind of want to go double down on, is the place of women in the courier. To the best of my knowledge, traditionally, the women were basically probably equally chock-souled, let's be honest, but at home cooking while the men were out acting the fool on the horses. Mm-hmm. And maybe a couple of women, or I don't think you'd bring your daughter to watch you chase a chicken up a greased pole, yeah, but who knows? But it seems like the women weren't necessarily involved in the historic sense. But whenever you go out, like, do you hear about women having a more inclusive role, or in most places, they do seem to traditionally still be predominantly male? And it's got us in a weird place of like inclusion versus tradition, progressing and getting together versus, do I want to go on a mobile mosh pit? Chasing a chicken. Do I want to go on a mosh pit with a mission with a bunch of guys from, you know, the Prairie Cajun Boys? I'd love to be able to, given the opportunity to decline. I guess it's kind of my personal state on it right now.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, as far as women being like historical to it, you know, you have to think about it in that I would say they were, but in the way that those were the mamas making all the costumes for these guys. You know, they were probably cooking all the food from whenever they came back. They were a big part of it, just that silent part, right? The part that's unknown because, you know, they weren't actually participating in those runs. That's what I've always heard. Currently in Church Point, it's men, I think it's, you have to be, I want to say 16 or older. And it's funny because I had a couple friends, women friends of mine, who actually like showed up to the run and like participated. But I mean, you have to have a mask and a hat, so nobody knew otherwise, right? So I was like, that's pretty badass. But I'd be so like, oh God, I would feel like I would get outed.
No, it's true, because now that I've said the phrase mosh pit with a mission, that's kind of might be how I think of a courier chicken chase from now on. For me personally, it still feels like something that I would have to be invited to go to, or like at least know somebody to go there. I don't know that I have the confiance to just be like, what's up, and just show up the way some people do, because it does feel like something that I would have to be invited to. But at the same time, like as a woman, it's like, okay, I'm going to go these people do this. I would want to participate. Mm-hmm. I would want a place to participate. And by all means, if we've got any listeners out there that have a little bit more insight, we're going to probably be doing another Mardi Gras episode next year. So whenever you listen to this, you know, email us at outlandishparish@gmail.com and give us some perspective. Was there any kind of deference, or like, was there a specifically girls run or women's run? Because I know they have that at Vermilionville. They have a public friendly, relatively sober courier, that they do a petite courier where the little kids get to run, and they do a courier de femme.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I felt like I kind of had to be invited too, but especially for Ficatayé, you don't really need any type of invite. You just honestly have to know somebody who knows Joelle's address. Like, you really don't have to know anyone. You can show up. Now, granted, you got to pay your little $20 and you get your little patch, mm-hmm. and you put it on so that, you know, they know you paid, because that pays for the gumbo and all the
parties are expensive.
Yeah, you know, he has to pay for the porta potties and all that stuff and the big gumbo and whatnot. But yeah, you don't have to have an invite. And I mean, Ficatayé is very straightforward, a co-ed. It's always been co-ed as a run. And then as far as like women led runs that are like community based, where it's not associated with like Vermilionville or something like that, I don't think that Prairie des Femmes is still going on. I mean, it's been 4 years, and then, mm-hmm. you know, the pandemic and everything. They also have one. They did it last year. It's called Nez Peak, and it's near, I want to say, like Mamou. That one was also co-ed, and also like pretty big trailblazer for including people like Creole people and Black people, which is also another element that I don't think they're super inclusive whenever it comes to that. But Nez Peak, I think, was really trying. I think the guy who organized it, I think his name is Brandon Moreau. And my friend, one of my good friends, Macy, she lives out in Grand Coteau. She was a part of that run last year, and he was living somewhere like out of state, and he came back and he wanted to have something that was really like much more inclusive, not just including women, but including like people of Creole descent, just anyone really. And like, I was looking them up to see if they were going to run this year, but I think they said they were going to postpone until 2025. I'm not sure the reason, but they did make the run. And so again, all of these places, like, you don't necessarily need to be invited. Like, they will have some type of sign up where, you know, I remember for Prairie des Femmes, like, I showed up at some, me and my friend showed up at some general store and like paid our $20 and we had to sign a release, you know, basically just saying that we were responsible.
I promise I'm a couillon.
Yeah, like if we messed up, it was on us, not them, that kind of thing. If we got hurt, it's on us, not them. Which is, you know, I get that liability is important, but you don't have to be invited. I mean, granted, like, there are some runs I know that may be a little bit more exclusive in terms of, not necessarily in terms of you being a woman or being of any type of like descent or costume wise or anything like that, but more of like you being an actual like citizen of the community.
Yeah, I think when I went to IOTA, I didn't go for the courier. Like, I went selling books. It was a thing. And I know it was one of those things that the guy was very clear to tell me, like, if you didn't sign up before, there was day of signing up. They want it to be a little more organized. They want it to be the people for their community. And that's going to vary from one to the other. You know, some people are really encouraging the tourism and the travel, and it seems like some people are trying to keep their own traditions going for themselves. And that's up to the community to decide. You know, I don't think that anybody's going to like be a true about it. You know, it's just,
I think there's a difference though, because I see both sides where you need something for the community to have and to, you know, just keep for themselves because it's important for like their identity and everything. And then there's, runs like Fikataye that, you know, you can be from anywhere. I mean, there's people who they literally like come from some place like East Coast because they heard about it from somebody who went in New Orleans, right? And like a lot of people who live in New Orleans, like they're not even from Louisiana. And like they went and then they told their friends who are from wherever they're from. And so Fikataye has been kind of like, I guess, a nice gathering place for people who can be introduced to it, but also you're going into the country, you're going into like to see Joel's neighbors, you know, people that he lives next to, or I say next to, it's like a mile away from his house because everybody's so spread out, you know, in those communities. But that run in particular, I've always loved because it's kind of doing the best of both worlds where it's like it's letting everybody in, men, women, whatever creed, nationality, ethnicity, whatever you are. But then also being like, this is our community too. We're going to go to people who live here and do the whole like begging and.
Yeah. They're going to include their community. And I don't know of anybody that specifically excludes based on anything other than like proximity and gender.
I mean, you hear, now I don't want to get into that, but you hear things about certain communities, you know, I mean, there's always, unfortunately with any tradition, there's always some and some drama, but like, I think a lot of that's being kind of sussed out too, because
ain't nobody got time for that no more.
You know, it's 2024. I would hope as a society, we'd be more mature and just like, hey, it's a tradition and that's great. Yeah. And we can still do this, but we can include everybody. It's not a spectator sport. You have to participate. And I think that's the idea, is that anybody can do this.
Everybody's welcome.
And you can derive meaning from it.
You just might have to sign up like a month before. And, you're welcome, but
pay you $20.
Did you sign up early? Pay you
$20. Right.
Great. I got to be honest, like, you making me want to try and find
Fikataye. I'm pretty sure if you search on Facebook events or whatever, you can probably find it. Because, you know, he don't want his address being like blasted everywhere. But honestly, if you go down that highway, you don't even have to know the number to it because you just follow the cars. And the cool thing about it is the night before, I think he still does this. I think they still organize it this way. You can camp out. So like all your camping gear, if you want to go out there, you can camp on his property. And then also they have a bar, I think it's called The Holiday, that they get a shuttle bus because everybody's all piat and whatnot, and they just have somebody just drive people back and forth to The Holiday, and they have a band playing, and and so people are getting like tore up the night before and then waking up at like 7 o'clock. I remember my friend Abby and her husband Leo, they were out there and they brought a whole griddle, and I got there early and I just see them coming out of their tent and Leo has a whole griddle and he's just frying eggs for everybody. I was like, are you still up? And he was like, yeah.
I mean, eggs hit right at a certain time of the morning when you've seen the sunset and the sunrise.
Pro tip for the courier, like, eat a good breakfast, because like, you know, like, even if you're hungover, like being dehydrated, that's one thing, but just not having anything in your stomach at all, and you're about to, overall I think it's like 3 to 6 miles, anywhere between that, like, and you're doing it all day, like it's a slow and steady thing, but like it can be a little arduous, so like you need to eat, you know.
It's a long way to that piece of boudin that evangeline bread.
And whenever you get it, if you haven't eaten, like, look, they divvy out those things, so it's like you don't want to be that greedy person, you know, like, because I mean, it's like, I think now that run, it's like 400 to 500 people. I mean, it's big, and that's great.
That's a lot of boudin.
And I think they get it from a place in Eunice. It's like, forget what the place is called. But I mean, they, you know, they making some money for sure, because it's so much boudin. But I mean, it's like, man, you know, you get what you get and then you move on. So it's like, look, carry you some snacks, have some beef jerky on you, and the love of God, bring some water, get a Camelback or something. I mean, I'm dead serious. So I don't drink anymore. But like when I did, back when I was doing the runs, like that was people are drinking and I'm like, man, I hope none of y'all pass out or anything, because some years are really hot.
Yeah. Especially this year, it's going to be so early, but that's still kind of a 50-50. It might be these 20s and teens like we had this past week, and it might be 90 degrees. Yeah, who knows?
I
But what is it like once y'all get back, like after the, whenever, like the end of the party, like what is it, whenever y'all come back to the house for the gumbo, is it just everybody hanging out and goofing off, or what's the end of the day look like?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it, because I didn't want to leave out this part, because I think it's one of the most important parts of, especially Fikataye. I'm not going to speak for any other run, because this one is very, this thing that they do is very specific to Fikataye. So the one of the last stops before we get back to Joelle's is in a graveyard. It's on a, it's off a highway in between like Eunice and Mamu, I believe. And really, really small graveyard. And that's where Dennis McGee is and his wife are buried. And Dennis McGee, I mean, this is like classic Cajun musician, was one of the first recorded Cajun musicians ever. And he played music with Amadé Ardoin, who is really amazing fiddler. So what they do is they stop, and it's a very solemn kind of gathering. And I remember my second year being there, it was very emotional for me, because they started with like a prayer, like the capitan leads a prayer, and it feels like almost like a new year kind of gathering, if that makes any sense. Like the verbiage around that is like, you know, we're so grateful that we're here, that we get to celebrate and be together and be a community, and that this man who started recording this music, right? Because it was like before it was recorded, well, it, before that music was recorded, it was just, that was the songs that people just sang, you know, on their porch. You couldn't reference it if you weren't from there. And from there, you have this whole culture that was created from, like, you know, people being able to hear it and then start doing their own thing. So they're very solemn about that. And so they have kind of this, they do like a waltz that I think Dennis McGee wrote, and they play a couple songs, and it's, again, it's very kind of tuned down to everything else that had just happened, like previously with all the other stops that were usually chaos with the chickens and the running around and the Mardi Gras song and everything. This is kind of that last stop. So I think like my second year, I had just like gotten, oh God, so heartbroken by this little short man from Kaplan. And
oh no. And,
what's up, Kyle?
Not a little short man.
No, he's a sweetheart. I love him. And I was heartbroken. And I remember one of my friends that I went on the run with, we just started crying. And I don't know, because like, you just put you in a place of reflecting. And I'm like sitting by this man's grave, just sobbing.
No, sometimes the music hits you that way. I remember the first time I did festivals, I caught Jan Creole in Lafayette. And I, like I said, I did not grow up listening to Cajun music. I it's not something that I listened to my whole life. It's that I've come to as an adult. And I was just working the festival, selling my art. And it was this little trio of women called Les Bicettes. And they were all these little petite things. And I don't know what the hell they played. I don't think they ever even put out an album. But all of a sudden, it was like all of the cunacity of my soul, like all of the Cajunness, like blossomed in my heart. And next thing I know, I am like, I don't know the words. I didn't know as much French then as I do now. And it just, it did what music does. It hits you. And I can understand, I can see why, like stopping there and letting the musicians who've been pulling everybody through this interesting and strange and high and low of a day. And then they're having that gasp, right? Like that must be where the musicians are sitting there and they're having their moment, because I have to think they at least have.
Most of them, honestly, they're, or at least they sober up, especially for that, because, you know, it's such a, like, I think it's also their way of just being like, you know, them paying homage to the fact that they can do what they can do, because it's kind of like, you know, these people walk so y'all can run, you know, that kind of thing. And and I don't know. I mean, I think in years following that, I still got really not as emotional as that, because that was a situation that wasn't even linked to Mardi Gras. But, you know, you get there and everybody is, there's no fooling around. Like nobody's trying to be goofy. You know, everybody takes it very seriously. And and it's kind of just that last thing. And then we get up and we move on. And whenever we get back, it's just kind of this free for all. Honestly, it's kind of funny because they have a band and it rotates. I mean, it's kind of whoever's out there. And I mean, Joelle and Wilson basically know everybody I like to think they do. And they're playing music and they're serving that gumbo. So, you know, you get in line and everybody's basically stripping down because you know, whenever you wear your hat and mask all day, it's like, okay, now I can kind of peel off the layers and kind of reflect on what just happened. And I just, yeah. I will say this. I don't understand how some people, I don't understand how I had the energy to like keep dancing and like doing all that. Like once, cause once you get back there, I mean, it's almost like 4 or 5 o'clock. You just had a whole day and you probably just wolfed down the gumbo. And if you set up camp, now you got to tear it down. And I mean, there was the first year that we did it, I don't even think they did the whole run because it was so cold. And so we got back and immediately we got in my friend's car and just turned the heater on. And just like, we didn't even talk to each other. We were just like defrosting. Mm-hmm. It was because yeah. it was so cold. But yeah, most of the time, whenever you get back, I mean, there was one year where Joelle, they have like a little, I guess you can call it, I wouldn't even call it a bayou, but just like, I guess a little pond and people were jumping in it. I was like, oh God, I'm sorry, but no.
It's probably those 19-year-olds that were up the greased pole earlier.
It really is just, it's kind of the perfect ending because like you got a belly full of gumbo and you're probably sobering up a little bit to drive back home. I mean, I remember just getting back home and it's almost kind of sad. You're like, oh, it's over.
Yeah, it's that come down. That's what you need, right? You mm-hmm. get it all out. You get it all out and then you have to leave. Now, look, it's been a hot minute since I was anything other than a casual church attendee. I'm Catholic and I haven't for a very long time. But I do appreciate the physicality of Catholicism traditions, right? That it's not a concept. This is moving.
Oh, you're moving.
This is religion. This is tradition with a physical practice. This is some idea that we've held on to, a physical expression of that farewell to the flesh, right? Like you are exhausted your body, you are doing all the stupid things that you are not gonna be doing for the next month. You're indulging in a way you don't even want to drink, right? Like you need it to be so that you hit it so hard on Fat Tuesday that you can approach the next month with piety and with that desire quenched from overuse.
Oh yeah,
you know you can indulge to the nth degree and then step back into Lent, which is. It feels like if that's the way you feel whenever you're leaving the courier, then
And I know like some people, they'll have kind of like a dry lit. My old roommate, her cousin, I think gives up alcohol for Lent like every year. And I mean, I know a good bit of people who end up doing that. And it's funny because like, I remember it was one year where like several of us were like, you know what? That sounds like a good idea. Because you're just so tired. Because I mean, leading up to the courier, like for me, it was going to all the shows and doing all the Mardi Gras things beforehand. So it was like going to the Blue Moon all the time. And, you know, like maybe showing up to the Lafayette Parade, but then I'm going to the dance, you know, after. And then, you know, so you're having like a month of just drinking and eating and drinking and eating. And then you do the courier and like, you're just acting a fool and then it ends. It's like, and sometimes I'm not gonna lie, I'm very grateful because on top of that, the thing that sometimes is really stressful, a lot of people don't talk about, is getting prepared for the courier, like making your costume, like that's a whole thing. Cause I remember living in the St. Streets and I had a group of guy friends who lived across the street from me and they had never done courier, but they wanted to do it. But they knew they needed a costume and they're like, all right, like this is going to take a long time because, I mean, you're cutting the fabric, you're cutting into little strips and then, you know, you can be as elaborate or as simple as you want. And so I decided, I was like, you know what? Somebody come to my house, take over my kitchen, make a gravy and bring all your bring your glue gun, bring your little sewing machine, bring all your scissors, all that. And we're just going to hyper focus and, you know, maybe drink a little bit and make our costume, because like you have to have dedicated time to do it, because that's the most stressful thing, honestly, is getting that piece together. And I feel like that's kind of a common thing where it's like, oh yeah, you ready for courier? Oh man, I got like 2 weeks to make a costume, you know.
And what are some of the things that you know of that maybe just from being in the community that people do to prepare that maybe other people don't think about, like preparing the ingredients, getting ready for the musicians, for doing the run, being the capitan. Like,
I wouldn't say anything like special is done to get ready for it, but I know one guy, and I don't know this guy's name. If I saw him, I would know him, but I've heard, I haven't heard from him, but secondhand I've heard that he will start jogging 3 to 4 months before, just because he wants to keep up. So he's one of the like VLAN or something like that. So they have to be on top of the Mardi Gras, right? So like you have to be kind of active. You can't be like falling on the ground. So he'll start running 3 to 4 miles a day or something to just have the endurance to be able to do that. Yeah. And honestly, I probably should have done that, because whenever you finish it, like the day after, I mean, you really do feel like you ran a marathon. It's tough. So if your work says, oh, you got to be at work for Ash Wednesday, like you're so
like. Well, you make it sound like a lot of fun. But look, over the course of our conversation, I found the Facebook page. So if
you should go, I mean,
I don't know. Maybe I'll see you out there on the 13th. Maybe we can go. I got my 25. Girl, bucks.
Like it's really hard. I'm gonna say this, being sober, doing it now.
Yeah,
it has its moments for sure. It's a beautiful day. And if anything, even if you're not so much about the like getting twisted or whatever, it's just like the colors and the yelling and screaming and the songs, like that's reason enough to just go and be a part of it, to be honest.
Kelly, thank you so much for doing this. Thanks for helping get the word out about Cajun Country Mardi Gras. I appreciate you, darling. So do all the people that hang out in Outlandish Parish.
And so